sound of music.
Oscar Hammerstein died 50 years ago. They dimmed the lights of Broadway and London's West End in his honor for writing the lyrics and libretto to some of the most famous and enduring songs and shows in history. From Showboat to Oklahoma to South Pacific and The King and I to Flower Drum Song and The Sound of Music.
My heart wants to beat like the wings of the birds that rise from the lake to the trees.
Mary Martin, by the way, in the original cast version. But Hammerstein's didn't just build Broadway with hit shows, but the first theaters that made Times Square into a theater capital. A new book reveals how five generations of the Hammersteins have influenced musical theater. It's the first biography to be written by a member of the family, and it's called The Hammersteins, A Musical Theater Family, by Oscar Andrew Hammerstein. He joins us from New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Let's begin with Oscar Hammerstein I, your great-great-grandfather, right?
Correct.
And worked in a cigar factory.
Yeah, he got here in 1864 and found work sweeping up at a cigar factory and moved up in the ranks until he was manager and then started inventing cigar machines. And he made a fortune from inventing cigar machines before he even turned 30 years old. So he had money to spend on building theaters.
And he loved opera. He had an idea that opera could be made more popular in New York City.
That's correct. In fact, he spent most of his life and all of his money in the pursuit of that dream. And had he been a rational man, we would probably own much of what is now Times Square, but our legacy now is much more in the creative side. He left a legacy and an inspiration to his sons and his grandson, which has stood this family in pretty good stead.
Your grandfather, Oscar Hammerstein II, he had a knack for putting songs in the right places. How do you think your grandfather broke the mold of the American musical?
I defer to Stephen Sondheim here. He makes a pretty cogent argument for what Oscar left in his wake. The three conventions that Oscar left behind was to start your show off right away. Do not waste time with an opening number, a high-kicking chorus, but to tell your story from the first note out. Good example would be Oklahoma and Oh, What a Beautiful Morning. It tells the audience, sit down, we're telling a story here.
The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's a climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful morning.
That cues the audience that this is going to be something worth sitting down and listening to. And the second one was delayed love song, the coy love duet, where you get to introduce the love between the boy meets girl, but you get to delay it until at least the second act when you've developed their characters and set up the conflict that they're going to face. And that's a great idea because you don't want to throw them at each other before we get to know them, because we won't care about their love if we don't care about them individually. Mm-hmm. And the third one, which is not so much a convention, but it's a good example of musical theater at its best, would be the soliloquy from Carousel.
I wonder what he'll think of me. I guess he'll call me the old man.
It tells a story and takes a plot around many different corners and drops you off very far from where the song starts. That is, that's an art form, to be able to do the sung story in such a way that you turn so many corners and deposit your audience in a new spot and reveal character and develop plot. That, to me, is the ideal of what he did.
Had he ever been to Oklahoma?
I don't think so, no. He fancied himself a gentleman farmer, but I think Bucks County was about as far as he ever got. And the corn was
what
grew.
Well, the cattle stands like statues in Bucks County, too, don't they?
Oh, well, the source material is Green Grow the Lilacs by Lynn Riggs. And he had written these lyrics, took him a couple of days, maybe a week or two, and he sends them off to Richard Rodgers, and Richard Rodgers takes a cab home, then calls him back and says, da 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 da. And Oscar is livid. He goes, here I work for weeks, and this guy takes a cab ride, and the music just comes right out of him. But I think Richard Rodgers was quoted as saying, the music just wrote itself. The words wrote the music for him. It made his job completely easy.
1947, Allegro.
Our world is for the forceful and not for sentimental folk.
I think it's safe to say not as successful.
No.
Although every now and then there's still productions that are mounted. And I gather your grandfather believed that you learned something. Well, you learn something from flops, you don't learn from successes.
He was quoted as saying you learn much more from a flop than a hit, because it's hard to learn anything when everyone's praising you to the skies on those opening nights where everything is going well. But Allegro was the first show that he wrote that was coming from him personally rather than from a source material other than himself. And that was tough, because if you think about it, he was a melodramatic writer who had been adapting materials ever since the 20s, and this is a stretch, I think, for him. Mm-hmm. He couldn't bring to it the conventions that he had relied upon. It was just a little too raw, a little too dear, a little too close. And so I think he pulled back from making it as good as it could have been. I'm not sure out of fear, but just being unable to.
Same tempo, morning and Allegro. Don't stop whatever you do. Do something dizzy and new.
South Pacific and The King and I, in the post-war era, they also broke some taboos, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. The fitting example is You've Got to Be Carefully Taught from South Pacific, which many people wanted Oscar to remove that from the show. And I think he went to James Michener and talked about it with him. Mm-hmm. And I believe James Michener said, you know, that is the show. That is the center of the show. That's its heart. You can't take that out.
You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made, and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught.
This is, we should explain, interracial romance.
And, yes,
and
yes.
And even more is the, and of course the way bigotry is aggravated by
that. Yes, and Oscar actually visits that theme throughout much of his work, from Carmen Jones through Flower Drum Song. There's a lot of looking at cross-cultural and racial friction and trying to come to grips with it in some way or another.
And finally this, why do these songs and these shows persist and endure?
I think the reason why they're so popular is because the story is the organic center around which everything else revolves. There are a lot of great songs in a lot of flop musicals through history, and we never hear them because no one puts those shows on anymore. Whereas, I would ask you in all sincerity, do you really think Real Nice Clam Bake is a great song? Maybe not, but will you hear it from now until, you know, forever? Yes, because it's in a platform. It's in a show that will always be there. And I think that's the difference, that Oscar was very clear about the narrative being the most important thing, and everything else follows from that. He's a storyteller.
Oscar Andrew Hammerstein, thanks so much.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you, Scott.
Mr. Hammerstein, speaking from New York, of course, his book is The Hammersteins, A Musical Theater Family.
This was a real nice plan.
Remember when we raked them red-hot lobsters out of the driftwood fire? They sizzled and crackled and sputtered a song fitting for an angel's choir.
And you can learn about how Oscar Hammerstein II almost became a lawyer. See images from his productions on our website at npr.org. And this is our little clam bake and viewers weekend edition, directed by Elaine Heinzman and produced by Sarah Barr Kelly, Kimberly Adams, Gemma Waters, Ned Wharton, Chris Benderev, Walter Ray Watson, Justin O'Neill, and Alexandra Wilding. Our editors are Jeffrey Bennett and Deborah George. Our technical director today is Kevin Waite, while Burke Hunn celebrates the victory of the Texas Rangers. Our librarian, Key Molesky. Melissa Goh is our web producer. Our show was produced today by Justine Kennan and edited by Tony Marcano. Our senior editor is Jenny Burgle, and the senior producer of Weekend Edition is Bridget Kelly. Have a happy clam bake this weekend. I'm Scott Simon.